This podcast is sponsored by the Music Producers Guild of New Zealand, Aotearoa. The Music Producers Guild is an advisory service that assists and empowers our music producer industry here in New Zealand. Members get personalised contracts for their music production, free Serato Studio Sample and DJ Pro, access to discounted audio equipment and software, and advice from industry professionals. Buy your plugins through the Music Producers Guild website to help support us all in growing our community. For more information and to sign up as a member, please visit www.mpgnz.co.nz. Welcome everyone to Beat Whānau Podcast, and this week we're joined by IZT. What's good, my man?
How's it going, brother? How are we?
So good. And we made it, my man. We made it here.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, so rapt to be on, eh? Yeah.
Proud moment. Oh, hard out. So awesome. You've been a big supporter of Beat Whānau all the way through. So, it's a special episode just thinking about as well how Beat Whānau has evolved from the old Palmy days. And now that I'm in Auckland, I've been carrying on that movement,
going through the roof, bro. I've been doing stuff with Lee Matthews.
There's no
limit.
That's right. Well, I remember seeing Montali on the weekend. They were like, oh yeah, he was keen. So we're penciling in some really great corridor for everyone, bro. But to kick things off, how's things been?
Pretty normal for me. Apart from lockdown's a bit of a stitch up, but everybody will probably be listening to this in the future, but so we don't know how long it's going to be going on for, but we will know when it's come out. So
that's right, by the time this is out, I reckon we'll be out. I'll tell you what, it's been so awesome to like have that that power and choice to be like, okay, I got an opportunity here to carry on this podcast like in the same way I did when I first started, eh? Bring everyone sort of up to speed, my bro. We actually knew each other back in high school, didn't we? That's how we met, eh?
Yeah, or even I think I may have even met you before then, or maybe
familiar faces.
Around intermediate time, because I used to know Payne Noble,
yes,
and through another friend of mine, and then I think I've seen you around with him, and then went to school with each other. And
because you were intermediate normal, or is that difference?
No, I'm talking like boys fire.
Early boys fire. Right from the unit. Yeah, man, 100%.
I always knew the name DJ Snare from I remember.
that was a fun little name, and and the beatboxing and all that saga, that was such a beautiful...
Yeah, bro. Yeah, I remember that, actually.
But, fast forward, we've known each other for a little while, considering all that, and it was... I'm just trying to remember if you remember how I kicked off a DJ club at Boys High with Michael. It was cool. We actually had a DJ club.
I think I've definitely heard...
seeing how good the memory is, eh? It's a while. Kicking it off, my man. What was sort of those earliest memories of music for you, my bro?
Probably, I don't know, going way back, it was always like Red Hot Chili Peppers in the car, you know, the parents and all those sort of tunes. But yeah, first sort of started really getting into music when I was probably around maybe 12, 13, you know, just like quite into sort of, you know, drum, but dubstep was just coming up hard as at that time. Like early Mount Eden and stuff, I suppose. But back then I wasn't really into music like I am with like drum and bass and all that now. Well, it was sort of different, you know, it was just music like cool music.
Like, yeah, it was just like even all the other cool things you do when you're young, eh? Like,
yeah, bro, and it was just, you know, buy your first car, and then it's just like, oh, yo, do you ever see those little cassette player things that went to the aux?
Old-ass
head unit, so that was when I was really into trap and, like, all that sort of, and, like, the, oh, like, is that Flume album? Not sure if it was like his first one, but yeah, it was real huge at the time. Yeah, I remember.
You must have got one of those good cassette hooks, because you get like, it was amazing how the quality was so vast from like the real cheap shitty ones.
Oh yeah, well, this was like a 1991 Mitsubishi Lancer, and like the speakers were like so bad, bro. So yeah. I don't think it would have made a difference. And it was definitely not a good quality one. It was like a $2 one.
Nice.
$5 one. Yeah, or something, bro. Yeah,
so. But it's amazing how, like, despite all of that, like, you can, like, it's still enough to have a feeling, eh? That's how powerful music is, eh? Like,
oh, 100%, bro, yeah.
Such a big feeling for, like, something that's, like, you listen back then and be like, whoa, what a that quality, eh? It would be like, oh, at the time, bro.
Exactly.
Yeah, nah, that's so cool. So, you're talking about, yeah, like, it was definitely the uprising jump, like, dubstep when we were going through early high school, isn't it?
Yeah, bro, I always, like, remember, like, Skrillex was a big one, like, oh, I can't remember the name of the tune. But, oh, Going Hard? The drum and bass one of that?
Yeah.
Which I've actually just touched back on recently. And, like, it's like, oh, shit. Like, I remember that tune. Actually, I was talking to Michael, MDNZ.
Yes.
And, like, yeah, we were just having a few beers around at mine one night. And, yeah, he showed that to me again. I was like, holy shit. And the second drop is just, like, crazy, bro.
Wow.
So, yeah, I've actually been sort of playing that a bit lately.
Yeah,
to myself. But so it's like that dubstep, and then like trap. Like, I was real into that, like into it, like nothing compared to what I'm like now with music, but like that was the big thing for me. Like Troy Boy and like Miss Carmack and like all that sort of thing. Yeah,
wow,
I love all that.
Oh, wow, so yeah, it's amazing how much it's like the influence from the people around us, too. Eh? Like everyone was kind of like, listen to this, you know, like, that's how I got into a lot of this. Eh?
Yeah, and all those like bootleg phone apps that you get, you could like download music.
Yes, that's right. Man, that's amazing. There was even probably, I don't know, it was in your time that there was a bit of like just straight Bluetooth file sharing, like how you could do it between phones.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, no, I remember. That was back at the start.
Nokia, start. Nokia days.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, man.
Now look what we got now, all the power you can ever want in your hand. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, that's so cool. And what was the sort of earliest memory of you like getting into like the DJs and figuring out, oh, this is something that's like, you know, like you're really into, and like, was there like a big progression into actually you wanting a DJ, or was it just something that just crept up on you?
So I think it was like 2017, it was like the first time the R&B was 18 years old. And I don't know, started going to gigs and stuff, and like, I did sort of think, it would be cool to be up there, getting to play. Like, it looked fun as, like, DJs always looked like they're having fun, etc. Yeah. But it wasn't until, I think it was late 2000, no, it was early, like, January 2018, and my mate Liam Smith, a good mate of mine, was actually, he had this app on his phone, like this DJ, like DJ Pro or something.
Yeah.
And that was real cool. I was like, it's not like it is anymore. It used to be like linked to Spotify. So you could just get songs out of your own playlist and et cetera. Anyway, so that's what got me started going on that. And like, yeah, used the high pass, low pass filters. Like,
yes.
And like, just pressing sync and just like.
Yes.
Playing so like out. Not even in phase or anything, but just sort of. Just but I thought I was real good at the time. It's kind of like, but that's what got me started. And then when I seen like Travis Thompson and Chappie and all that, those lads, Cody Hugh, Ben, all those lads. Sure, I think for us. But yeah, that because I used to run at Milano's in town, that little bar.
That's right.
They used to go off for a while.
That's where
I first like cut my teeth of like proper raving, like, you know, at clubs and that sort of thing.
That's
not
amazing.
Just like the daily or something.
And you were definitely at the same time around was it like around some people to help you like learn it, or what was like the next sort of steps into you getting on the decks yourself?
I just used to talk to Trev and Chappy, like talk to them about it, and like, oh, how did you start and all the rest. And then I got talking to another dude, Nathan Watts. Nice. He used to live in Palmy, but I've gone on to have him. Yes. I mean, you know Nathan, don't you?
Oh, go back, yeah. Yeah, I think I would have been, if I met him before I finished high school, because I moved to Freiburg, so it might have been around the same time you would have got to know him too, yeah.
Yeah, and I think for the time I saw, because I haven't actually never met him in person, but just we're in this group chat with Trav and all the rest of the Denbeek crew, Palmer Denbeek crew, and he was actually living in Aussie at this stage.
That's right.
Well, I was just about to move to Aussie.
Yes, that's right.
And he's done like DJed like big like clubs up there. Like,
that's right.
Like a weekly thing or whatever. Right?
He had a
weekly thing. It was like a huge club in, I actually can't remember.
No, exactly.
What it was. So I want to say Melbourne, but yeah.
Having some mashups in the USA. It's like some top 40 mashups when he went hard.
Anyway, I got talking to him and I was like, oh, what decks should I buy? Blah, blah, blah. Pioneer ones, and then it all just sort of sparked from there, and then two channel controller turned into a four channel, so on and so forth, and then I can't remember what year it was, but I think it was Serial Killers that was the first gig I got asked to play at. That might have, I think it was just before I got CDJs. Played at that, and then it's just been a huge passion ever since, really. Wow. But it all started with the love for like drum and bass. Yes. And like,
wow.
Yeah, so I don't know if it wasn't for that, I don't think I would have got into it, but it was just because like love the music so much, and I know it all comes back to not being a DJ as such, but like the drum and bass itself.
That's right. Yes, the energy from that can be quite powerful, and just seeing how much it drives you to do things.
Yeah.
You don't even realise how far you've come, but it's just because of the energy of it all there.
And it's like weird because like I never thought I'd be like into music this much in my life. Like growing up, it wasn't a big standout for me. It was just like a plus on top of everything.
That's right.
As soon as I actually started getting into drum and bass, it was like nothing else, just like the culture, like everything involved with it, like it was just so cool, like this like the spectrum and like the different genres and everything, like, you know,
it's right
based to any sort of mood.
It's right.
It's just amazing music, it's amazing heritage.
Yes.
100%.
Well, that's it. I was a strict house head, and then the friend from church introduced me to Tyler Clout, and then through Tyler Clout I met Nathan Watts, and I was just I think at that stage I was just starting out at Freiburg for year 12 and 13, and it was very cool to be around like both of them really into drum and bass. So despite me not really having that experience, it was something I always like, you know, thought, oh yeah, if there was a chance to like, you know, be around that stuff, then mean, because I always had a couple of like tunes I was into a drum bass. I was never really a big, like I wouldn't dare play like, you know, more than one or two tunes in a whole mix, and it was just straight house, man. And then it's the beauty of meeting other people and of, you know, into different styles, is they challenge you and you challenge them, and you know, I think they played a few house tunes that they wouldn't have played before, and I played a few drum and bass, and that was magical on its own, eh? It was so cool.
Oh, hot.
Yeah, but it's so cool. We kind of almost I didn't realize like it was Nathan Watts. It was like, you know, because he had a lot of time for you as well. He helped.
Oh yeah, he's a good dude.
Like he's a great impact. I can't wait to get him on Beat Finder, because that guy is that guy behind the scenes. I think he was very helpful to a lot of peeps, and it's just cool when you look back at those moments and be like, oh yeah, through the chats and the messages and the catch ups, is quite powerful, eh?
Yeah, and like speaking of that, I haven't actually caught up with the dude in a while, to be honest.
Yeah.
Flicking my chat at some point. But yeah, he was just like, Nathan was just like the dude that you just like literally hitting him up like, how are you meant to beat match? Like
that's right.
You know, like all of that sort of thing.
That's right. That he was definitely that was so cool just hearing that. But yeah, man, as you sort of started, you know, getting on to way more gigs and even having a few of your own, was there sort of like was there sort of like some places and people that you really were sort of like aspiring to, like, because you ended up getting to go to some festivals and stuff, like share some of the things that happened after you were getting into the DJing and once you had done a gig or two.
So one of the big things for me was the Thursday open decks at the Stun Mullet. Like that was like a huge change, because you know it was a weekly Thursday night event that was open decks, you know, so like you didn't have to like, you know, be known or be you know, to get on an actual lineup, like, you know what I mean.
Yes.
So yeah, that was really cool, and I think that did the like wonders for the Palmy scene early on, you know what I mean? Yes. And like big ups to like you and D-Fresh, Damien. D-Fresh, that was awesome.
It was
And then playing a few times at that, and it became a weekly occurrence, and then it was, so we actually So me and Fraser then ended up getting it off you guys.
That's right.
Which was awesome.
Yeah.
And I think at that point we sort of were running it under Central Base Kick-Ons.
That's right.
As well. Yes. And that was sort of when.
It was a bit of a. It was cool to see like all these cool posters and like things are starting to come together. Eh? That was cool. I liked
it. Yeah, so we sort of took over Central Base Kick-Ons at the time, and Kieran Dale and I think Coastal Promotions.
Yes,
was sort of, that was a sub label of that, if you will, and then we ended up sort of taking that over and using it to run under. Like as a gig name, you know, it's like not, so it was just like me and Fraser sort of thing, like
and then
we started changing the gigs up, and we bought a sound system and had all our own gear, and the night sort of became a real cool thing for like quite a while there.
That's right
it was sick. Started getting busier and busier with gigs and stuff,
it's amazing, because I think even just running that, you learn so much, both in terms of setting things up, packing them down, and fitting everyone in the lineup and all that, but you also helps you start to learn off other people doing the same thing and fit a to and fro of other people running shows. So like, what did you find that was like quite a helpful thing earlier on, like getting to look into, like, obviously improving, you know, fast forwarding to like looking at how to get people in from out of Palmy, was what was the sort of like initial phases that helped you get into that? Was there sort of people or things that helped you?
We were just sort of started like pretty keen to do our own gigs at that point and really get into it, and it was sort of one of those things, like you had to know another promoter to be able to get the artist. I mean, you're not going to be able to get an artist to come over, like do a whole tour, like it's just insanely expensive. So you sort of had to know the people, and
nice.
Central Base Kick-Ons was sort of affiliated with Sub-180. They've done quite a few gigs and helped do the support lineup, like Serial Killers, that was our first gig, and Boo, when he first came up, might have been the second tour, I can't remember. Something like that. And then someone AD asked us to help do some support for quite a few of the gigs, State of Mind, Upbeats.
Nice.
Heaps of gigs, and that was what sort of helped us get on the bandwagon of like learning how to do a gig and all that sort of thing, learning how the sort of whole process goes. So that was real good working with Sub 180. It gave us a good idea of how it all ran, and from there, since then we've done our first gig with Bruce E on our own, which was awesome. Went sick. It was probably, like, I won't say it's the most rowdiest night in Palmy that I've ever seen, but it was pretty large.
It was, yeah.
I was real happy with it too. It was quite stressful. And it's quite funny, it was one of those things where, like, I would never really wanted to get into it to be a promoter either. And that's still not my forte. It was just the matter of fact that there just wasn't much else happening in town.
Yes.
And it was just like, me and Fraser just sort of wanted to do something about that and make something happen. Like, you know what I mean?
Wow.
Because nothing else was going to happen. And
that's right.
And Wellington's got their own scene down there and stuff. So,
Yes.
And we used to get heaps of good stuff. When there's nothing much going on in Palmy, I mean, you had to. That was the only thing that was happening at the time. But for a while now, like, Palmy has just been good and stuff. Like, it's been awesome. That's sort of how we got into the promoting side of it. Which has been good, but stressful though. Like,
going
to the Bruce E gig, I think we we'd only sold, I can't remember, but it was only 200 tickets out of 450. And it was a week to go as well. We had sold 200 tickets and we were sketching out. We sort of know that, it's the same with every gig, they all get sold in the last day. On the day, you know what I mean? It's different to Auckland, all of that.
Yeah.
It's just less population, people. Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of that's actually happening tonight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ended up selling out pretty much on the night, or getting close to, I think. I think it was 4:30. I can't remember if that was including door sales or not. But it came off all good. That's just a lot of extra weight to carry, when you've got work and
on
at the same time. And then plus trying to have your hobby and enjoy it
yourself,
at the same time, being actually able to have proper time that you can use, productive time that you can actually enjoy it, and not
creative, not work. Exactly. That's such a big point there, bro. That's such a huge one for people from all spectrums of the music side, whether they're just the work they'd put in as an artist to feel like they could somehow try and do all the different hats that they need to do if everything's more on them to get their music out there. So it's for people listening, I think a lot of people relate to that, all the different sides of how sometimes it's very easy to go into music and then before you know it you feel like you're doing quite a you can feel a bit stressed out, and it's to help people know it's they're certainly not alone. It is what it is sort of thing sometimes.
It's one of those things too, big thing for me is trying to not make the whole everything involved with the label and doing the gigs and stuff is trying to not let the music become work.
That's
to have it still as a hobby, and that sort of has been challenging at times and stuff, with everything else going on.
You get back the next day.
But that's just all part of it, you know.
That's right. Nothing, it's a balance. But
100%,
it's you learn so much as you go, and you take it day by day, take on the chin. Tomorrow you come out with a new sort of set of experiences to find that balance. That's probably that's so good, bro. Moving on to your interest in production, which I had to delve into because it's something we've shared a lot of good positive times and memories on.
Yeah, bro.
yeah, was there sort of a moment that you really, like, was there any producers and really inspired you?
Well, from day dot getting into drum and bass, I've always wondered, like, how do you make that shit? Like,
yeah,
you know
especially
what I mean?
Like, listening to, like, noisy.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
Noisy,
right? That's when everyone's saying,
don't hit me like that. You know, that's my soft spot. If you want me to chew your ear off about that for the next bloody hour, it's going to be a long podcast, bro.
That's what that's supposed to be.
Yeah. I mean, hearing for Dead Limit for the first time.
Yeah.
In this underground club called Boss Bar. Town, yes, like, you remember Boss Bar? That was like the first time I was 17 and got past the security guard, and me and my bro managed to get in there. And Ben Cody played that for the first time, bro. That was crazy. Never hearing that before, and that was right at the start too. And that was just like,
that, I think a lot of people don't realise that the sound down at Boss Bar wasn't too bad. The way it was all positioned in the acoustics, it actually was pretty impressive, eh, for what it was.
Yeah, I remember it being pretty good at it. But
yeah, I mean
I only ever went there once.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, I was just like, wow, it's a shame that it closed down, because I would be thriving now.
100% it would. Yeah, it would be.
I would be going so hard, I'd be all over that, man.
Yeah, I'm just trying to mention, because I apparently made it up. I like always saw those stairs. I never went up them. Was there like a little part upstairs or not really? Was it just? Did you see those? You only did one. So.
I can't really remember. It was quite a small little bar, bro. Like,
it was.
Yeah, like the ceiling was short as, and like this little bar, like real little bar with like one till. But it was cool, man. It was awesome. But
yeah,
good things seem to come to an end, unfortunately.
That's right.
But yeah.
Wow, very good memories. And so getting more into that talk about production, was there any sort of things you did when you first wanted to figure it out? Did you just ask people and like on Facebook or person or like
YouTube? Yeah, first dude I asked about that was Michael in the NZ.
Nice.
And it was kind of one of those things that, like, I realized after a while, like, I just didn't want to be that, like, I wanted to be able to play something that I've brought to the table, not just, you know, playing all these other people's music, which is all good. Like, it's all good being a DJ, but, like, and there's another thing as well, is like, you're never going to get anywhere in music these days by being a DJ. You know?
That's right.
Like, and that's quoting AMC.
And it's like giving back as well, like when you feel like you've made something yourself, because then, you know, someone's got to make a new tune. Otherwise, exactly.
And I've always wanted to do it right from the start as well. But like, it's just been one of those things, just like, how, like, I thought learning to DJ was hard enough and mind-boggling at some point for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the music production side of it just sounded just super next hard. So I never really looked into it, but then I sort of realized I wanted to push the boat out a little bit and really give it a go. But I mean, I haven't really given it a solid crack since
February
this year, and then really cracking on to it with you and all that in March. So it's about a year in limbo, like a year and a half in limbo, just where I had FL and I'd try it for a couple of hours here and there, and just go like, nah, I don't, I'm sick of this. Like, you know, I'd rather go have a mix and like get the instant gratification
of pulling off mixes. Telling me as well how you got into like a couple of sessions before we start with Fraser, and that would have been a cool
that was another thing, and we're both in the same boat, and we both like sort of struggled with finding the motivation to do it, because it's just sounds hard, you know. But so we got going, and we did quite well. Like I first started out having a proper go with him.
Yes.
We made some cool stuff, very primitive, but
Cody
Hugh gave us a lot of help with that early on, and gave us all the few nice presets and drums and all the rest, you know, to get us started. Nothing, I haven't really been properly into it. We started making that track.
It's
that's been when it's really taken off for me, and realized that it's actually You put the mind to it, it's actually not that hard, sort of thing.
You're telling me, eh? Like, because it's amazing how much of the time you don't realize how much being a DJ, like, creates the producer in you, you know? Just like,
dipping
into it and, like, circumnavigating, like, obviously, the logical or the sort of human things you got to get past, because the rest is sort of your innate sort of ears that you've developed. And
it is amazing how, like, you know, all the skills you learn from DJing really is transferable into production. Like, it's, like echoing, like all that sort of stuff. Like, we've talked about this
a lot, but
it's crazy. Like, and so I just started thinking about it like that and just, having that mindset. And it's, it's been a lot better since I've started thinking like that. Well, since I've been, made it a lot simpler.
Oh, that's on there. That's like a big message to run in New Zealand too, because I see nothing but the levels of New Zealand music on the world stage and festivals, and it's exciting. So yeah, man, like
100%.
Real good, like a bit of a gem for everyone. Is if you're DJing, you're probably a lot more proficient in production than you realize. It's just you just got to get those past those first few hurdles, and before you know it, you've jumped over the next 10.
Still one of those things, like, still need to, I need to put more work into it, but it's just one of those things for me is like finding, like I said earlier, the productive time.
It's right.
You know what I mean?
And that's 100%. Thing,
like, and that's where it come back also to, like, talking about how, like, trying to keep the music not as a job, as a hobby, you know what I mean?
The journey.
And like a lot of like these gigs that I've had and stuff, like I've been busy with work, like I'm a self-employed plasterer, and like which is real good. It's real
rewarding, you know?
But gets real busy just being on my own sometimes, and like, I remember literally like staying up till like 1 a.m.
And when you got to
waking up, hitting work, and literally like having a gig Friday night,
fire ass,
like not having
energy,
like,
going out,
just stressing out, trying to record, like trying to practice this perfect mix, But
I feel you, bro. I feel you.
But you can't have your cake and eat it too.
Oh, exactly. So. The journey, it's, you know, the journey has its different, like, you know, obstacles and levels and challenges, and that's what makes it the journey, I guess.
But it's just one of those things that, like, I'm honestly thinking about starting to do like 4 day weeks or something. And sort of having that extra day, make that like music sort of day.
You speak on that. I actually see a whole shift in like society starting to realize they're getting sick and tired of being sick and tired. Bro, I would be surprised if someone brought in a legislation for a 3 day weekend.
Oh, bro, I reckon it should happen.
Yeah, like, exactly too.
Trialed it out in a few other countries, I'm pretty sure. Like Switzerland, Sweden, one of those. I'm pretty sure, they've tried it out and it's been like awesome. Like the productivity rates is so much higher because you just have a decent amount, like 2 weeks, like 2 days a week is like enough. Like, you know, like you're literally working so much of your life.
Mm.
And it's weird.
As long as you're still working 4 days, you know, and that's the bigger chunk, you know, compared to the three. So I'm definitely in favour, but we'll see how the tables turn. Who knows, maybe influence things a bit, and who knows, we might be looking at a 3 day weekend before we in our lifetime, mate. And that's another interesting point is my dad was just telling me the other day, like, how, you know, some people when they're overseas, because of how, like, if they're in the European areas, how it's real easy to like travel, obviously, within, you know, different countries, within like being in the same sort of area, and how some people just like take a quick trip for like North Africa, like Mediterranean sort of Spain, and like they could just go for like a few days, and it's like it's quite interesting with New Zealand how like, yeah, you can see the country for so much, and then like, you know, it's almost like sometimes a true holiday would be getting out of your comfort zone and going somewhere different, eh? So
yeah, exactly, yeah. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking on that topic, on Beat Finder, we're very kind of Joe Rogan-esque. We talk about a bit of everything. Have you been overseas?
Of course, yeah. Yeah, I have. I've been to Bali in Australia. I haven't been anywhere else. Went to Bali when I was very young. But yeah, no, since then, been to Australia around about 6 times, maybe.
Nice.
Yeah, got family over there, got cousins, 2 cousins and an auntie, and their kids, their babies. So yeah, no, I've been over there a few times, but haven't really explored the world as you'd say. And then when I've been to Australia, I've only really been to like sort of Queensland area, like Brisbane and all that sort of thing. So no, I'd really love to go over to like go to Europe and do all that, which I will do at some point once all this COVID thing cools down. But
that's right.
Yeah, actually had tickets to Let It Roll.
Oh, that's right.
2020 last year, so
yeah.
Obviously that didn't all pan out, which sucked. Yeah. But yeah, I was planning to do a bit of a contiki.
Wow, Let It Roll.
But yeah, that'll happen in time.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, sounds like when I'd love to go to Let It Roll. Just
biggest drum and bass festival in the world, bro.
Whoa.
And it's like big airfield in Czech Republic, bro. And it's just that and Rampage in Belgium.
Well, yeah,
it's definitely on the bucket list. That and hospitality on the beach would be also cool. All the big drum and bass ones.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. I'll add these to my bucket list.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, but now that's so cool. And kind of bringing it back into obviously with music, this is like a section where I love to sort of share things for people who are listening in, who kind of feel that presence of people kind of speaking life. Have we got some sort of tips or things that helped you along the journey, or little bits of encouragement, advice for everyone, especially getting into DJing and that? Don't worry, you could bring the generic one out. It could just be, man, just do it, because sometimes when you say it, it's the people listening who are like,
I'll tell you one thing is like, definitely just if you like work hard at something, you definitely get results no matter what your occupation is in life, whether it's DJing or whatnot. But like for DJing, for instance, like at the start of it, like I had no idea, like I haven't got a musical bone in my body. I can't, you know, did like music for like a few terms in year 9, which I had just no idea what it was up to.
Yes.
So yeah, don't be afraid. Like if you put the hours in, you will learn it, and just ask mates, ask friends.
Yeah.
You know, a few YouTube tutorials and just work at it. Yes. And you'll get there. But with anything, man, hard work always pays off.
Yeah. Oh, very well. I can't help but remember now to share everyone, the testimony that is Kick On Records, my man. So it's official.
Yes, sir,
It's not only is it gigs, it's actual music. So that's exciting, eh?
Yeah, bro. It's one of those things that I sort of wanted to do in the last year and a half, really. I don't know. It's just so cool to be able to have a label that can also work as a promotional company and release music and like, try to choose the music you want to release, and just creating like a hub for like a music taste that you want to push, and like give all these dudes opportunity.
That's right.
Like unknown producers that just don't get looked at because their music might be a little bit left field or something. And I don't know, it's just so cool. Me and Fraser, by the way, Fraser. Is his DJ name. He's my bro. We've done a lot together. We've pretty much been on the same journey in the same boat for a while now. We took over Central Bass Kickhorns with and done Kickhorn Records all the way through, own the sound system together and all that. So
yeah, exactly.
So yeah, he's a big part of my journey as well.
Looking forward to getting him on the podcast and talking.
Yeah, bro.
Exciting. I'm sure there's a lot of things for people to look forward to on the label, and I was sort of saying it passively now, but stay tuned. We might have a bit of deck check on the way as well, because MDNZ was some amazing first release for
the label. That was real cool, eh? We sort of, with the label, we sort of just rushed and didn't know how, we thought it was impossible for starters. As you know, we got into contact with you and you pointed us in the right direction.
I'm glad I did, because I wasn't sure if I did. As you were saying, I didn't know what I pointed us to.
I play it off, bro. You get nothing. No rewards down in your wrist, bro.
Try it out. What do you got to lose, eh?
Hey, now we got rights to Beatport, Juno, iTunes. Which is huge.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Big ups to you, bro. I always tell everyone you're as big as a part of Kickhorn Records as anybody. If it wasn't for you, we probably wouldn't have got to this point, or we might be in a more difficult situation trying to do it on our own stuff. It's not always what it's who
everyone's got something to share, eh? That's the one. You got it.
We got our first initial release with Michael MDNZ back in May.
Release party.
That was at the Brucey gig. I'll sort of tease something else. He has got something else coming up soon.
Yeah,
I would say in the next couple of months. I don't know when this is going to be want to keep an eye on the label for the rest of the year. It's been taking us a while just to sort of get a backlog of tunes up and make a few connections and all that. We've got some cool artists coming through, eh? Some big music. I can't wait to get it out and get things rolling. Ideally, I want to get to a stage where we can be releasing once every month, if not twice some months, which would be cool. And of course, a lot of emphasis on quality of music sort of thing. Also bringing stuff that wouldn't usually get, you know what I mean? Underground sort of vibes, me down to a T.
Yes.
And it's same with Fraser, and it's just you can go anywhere and you just have to turn on the radio these days to listen to pop 40. Drum and bass tunes, which are all cool which I love, but there's more to drum and bass than just that, you know what I mean?
I know, so much.
And there's no reason not to be different.
That's it.
You know what I mean? Yep. Which is cool.
Exciting. That sounds like we've covered everything, and it's awesome, bro. Thanks again for being on the podcast, my bro.
All good, brother. It's appreciated, eh? It's been an honor to be on here. It's been a big thing for you, right? It's come a long way, as you've said, bro. It's awesome, bro.
I just wanted to take this time to thank you for all your help. I mean, you're literally a sponsor, Kickhorn Records has been a sponsor of Beat Whānau, and we've sort of just done little things to help each other as sort of people who are pushing forward New Zealand music and taking it in from the greats, especially shouts to our bro Damien D Fresh. I can't wait to get him on the podcast too. And the days on the podcast, man, I think everything just, man, it's going to go to a next level. Because I mean, man, you know, the fact of how many peeps, like even I was talking to Cam OMC when he came, it's like, just mentioned Damien, you know, like that guy goes back as far as everyone's gone back, you know. He's still the same guy he was when he's got into it. So yeah, it's gonna be exciting.
Big shouts out to Damien as well. Yeah. He's huge. Been in the scene a long time, and yeah. So you need those people in the scene, you need those wise.
Oh, dudes. Hard out. They are
in the right direction, like, you know. And that's exactly. Sort of everybody, you know, I think if you're really a part of a scene, then like everybody, that's everyone's job to like do that, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Going for the love of it, you know what I mean?
Oh, 100%.
And yeah, I don't know if we'd be if we hadn't got the opportunity to run Central Base Kickball, I don't know.
Yeah.
Where we'd be right now, you know. So yeah.
Exactly. 100%. Well, man, that's so good. That's a gem for everyone. Finishing off is look up to those who have before you, and then carry on the sort of things that have been built and established, and carry on. But for everyone tuning in, that was Beat Final Podcast by ZT, and we really appreciate all your love and support getting us this far. So if you would like to continue to see more episodes and that, please share this out and consider donating or joining the Patreon. And the more people that join the Patreon, I guess the more that I feel what can we do next, what more value can we bring to you all. So without further ado, that's been Beat Fino Podcasts. Stay tuned for more podcasts. Peace and love, Fino.